Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Taking Stock on Friday, the 23rd of June, 2023. On today's podcast, Vadim Alexander covers another stock that is using AI, small microcap stocks in the med tech sector, and that's Cambridge Cognition. Plus, I've news on mortgages, retail sales, the losers, the winners, the most read RNSs as well. But first, Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. Thanks for joining me.
How are you doing, Justin?
Good, thanks. Yeah, so we do you know, accidentally we've been talking about sort of AI and all that stuff, and you realise, you know, there's certain sectors it suits very well. One of those is medicine, biopharma, because there's lots of data. And, of course, that data has to be mined, manipulated, cleaned and presented. And so we decided, well, let's have a look at, in the UK, some microcaps, maybe small caps, that are actively, you know, using AI because they've got lots of data. And so last week we did, what did we do last week? I can't think.
So last week we did e-therapeutics.
E-therapeutics. So they're on my watch list. And this week we're going to look at the Cambridge Cognition. COG is ticker. So first of all, Vadim, explain what Cambridge Cognition do.
Yeah. So basically they act for pharmaceutical companies. So they're a contract research organization. So they're what's known as a CRO. Mm-hmm. And they help pharmaceutical companies with their... Pharmaceutical companies can't do everything in their research, so they outsource specialist bits of their research to certain companies who specialize in a given area. Now, the area that these guys, Cambridge Cognition specializes in, is in cognitive assessment. So they try to assess what the impact of a drug has. So a pharmaceutical company is developing a drug, and their assessment is to assess what that drug, how it impacts your cognition, okay? And now with the recent approval of a drug in Alzheimer's disease, which was a big first very recently, you can see that, you know, there are drugs out there that are designed to slow cognitive decline. And you know, Alzheimer's disease is a big, big indication that's up and coming. In fact, all the CNS, the indications, and, you know, it's the next big area after oncology. So, you know, we, in terms of big areas, we had cardiovascular disease that was big in the 90s with the statins, and the noddies. And oncology came on stream with the immuno-oncology in the late noddies and the 2010s. And now the next big area, I mean, oncology and cardiovascular disease remain big areas, and there's always something new. But the next big area anything that has to do with the neurosciences, okay? Mm-hmm. And Alzheimer's disease being the big one, obviously the ability to measure cognitive decline is also a very big challenge. So this is the area that they specialize in. So they help pharmaceutical companies assess the cognition in their patients. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I'm going broad with that, mostly the trials in the area that they were involved in were in cognitive decline. But more recently, the company's actually even gone further and moved into the area of oncology, because a lot of drugs have, as a side effect, cognitive decline. So pharma companies are now trying to... So this is a very recently announced contract. They got a £2 million contract, which is very interesting for this company, because they're now broadening out beyond just, you know, cognitive decline as a therapeutic area. They're now looking at it as a side effect in oncology, which opens up a pretty big area for them. And the contract was not a de minimis contract. It was a pretty large contract. So what they're doing there is they're looking at new oncology drugs, and the pharmaceutical companies are relying on them to measure any kind of negative cognitive impact of those drugs. And you can see that that might apply to many other areas too. you know, as monitoring the side effect of what the impacts of these drugs have on the brain and in you know, causing accelerated cognitive decline or just even cognitive, any kind of cognitive impact.
Yeah, so that could be huge, guys. Yeah. I mean, can't they just do it? They can do it. Surely they can do any drug because, like I said, even though drugs, you know, go through clearance, I mean, are these drugs sort of, you know, sort of pre-FDA approval, are they, some of these drugs or not?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so the service provision is to pharmaceutical research departments, right? So these companies are going through phase 1, 2, 3 trials. So yeah. their drugs are going through those trials.
Yeah.
And they hire Cambridge Cognition to do the cognitive assessment work on the trial.
But surely that's essential in any area because you may have, you know, if you're taking sort of, like I said, you know, say a cancer drug that you have lung cancer and you're looking at it affects your lungs, whatever. But surely your cognitive effects are very important, you know. It's no point to improving your lung capacity or length of life if you can't, you know, sort of function properly from a cognitive point of view, is there?
Absolutely. I think this is the big new, it's a big area because before, and think about, orders of importance, let's say in a therapeutic area. Oncology is a good example because they just literally had a new contract which opens up this area. But as we start getting better in treating what used to be lethal diseases, now we start to worry about the impacts of the treatments themselves on the patient, right? So
yeah.
if the treatment is no longer, if the disease is controlled and no longer lethal, we're not quite there on oncology, but we're moving quickly towards getting better and better treatments, right? Now it becomes more about how bad is the treatment for the patient. And one of the measures is what is the impact on cognitive, you know, is this heavily impacting the patient's brain?
Yeah.
So,
It's in a company saying, well, listen, if you've got good news and bad news, our drug will kill your cancer, but you'll be brain dead.
I mean, that's pretty much what it boils down to, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of chemotherapies are extremely damaging, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully in time, and we are definitely on that path now, and we have very good success rates with a lot of these novel targeted therapies in oncology, and they're coming thick and fast, okay? That's the beauty is there's so many drugs now in the pipeline that we are getting to a stage of managing the disease. So in so doing, though, we can't, you know, now the priority starts to become quality of life. And hence these evaluations of drugs early on, are they really toxic to, you know, quality of, or to the brain, for example, and other organs? But here, you know, in this Cambridge Cognition, obviously, it's in relation to the brain. But you can see how it's becoming an important feature. And it's not just us saying this. The company just, you know, closed a pretty big contract in oncology.
Yeah, well, just reading that, like I said, that RNS there, they're saying regulatory approvals for oncology drugs have almost tripled in the last 10 years, from 16 approvals in 2013 to 43 in 2022. And with the growing number of therapeutics available, pharmaceutical companies are now investing heavily in differentiating their new drugs and are particularly focused on limiting long-term side effects such as cognitive impairment, which impacts 30% of patients following chemotherapy. Wow, so a third of patients who have chemotherapy are, you know, basically their cognitive functions affected. I didn't know that. I knew, obviously during the courses of chemotherapy, then you lose your hair, you lose your appetite, and you feel dreadful generally. So they're trying to make that better. But I didn't realize afterwards there was cognitive impairment from it.
It's they're so toxic, the chemotherapeutic drugs. And we've improved them and improved how we dose them and stuff like that over time. But, you know, the faster we move away from them, the better it will be for everyone. But, you know, they're still here. They're still, you know, the more often than not, the first line in, you know, of treatment. So, yeah, yes, exactly. But, you know, these second generation targeted therapies also have side effects and have to be monitored carefully. And I guess the main point is it's just another differentiator for a pharma company from the outset in terms of their drug, right? Mm-hmm. So they want to make sure that they can measure, and this is what Cambridge Cognition does so well. They're very, very good at measuring cognitive impact, okay? Mm-hmm. And cognitive decline. And what's interesting, and this is why I'm bringing it up in the AI context, is that they are very much a play on AI as well here on AIM, in that they, so one of the elements of, we all know this from you know, natural language processing or large language models, which we discussed last time about e-therapeutics, is a lot of the strength of AI is in language, right? Mm-hmm. Well, cognitive assessment is measured also in how a person speaks.
Yeah.
Okay. And these, they're biomarkers. It's a biomarker of cognitive decline in terms of, you know, people, how they look for words, how they construct their sentences, even the tone of their voices. Okay. And you can't necessarily do that by listening to them, but AI could pick it up. And that's, again, you know, these are one of the tools that's emerging in voice, in the analysis of voice. Okay. So voice analysis, understanding how people speak. So they just made an acquisition recently, I think in November last year, end of last year or early this year, they made two acquisitions, but one of them was specifically in voice AI. Okay. Yeah.
And, so and it's called Winterlight Labs. I'm reading about it here.
That's the one.
Yeah. So yeah, voice analysis.
The Canadian company.
Yeah. So essentially they monitor your voice and speech beforehand, and then they got these, and they said changes in the brain and nervous system can have dramatic effects on speech and language, making voice biomarkers, monitoring. So that's very clever. So basically they analyze it, and it's automated speech recognition, real time. They say up to 98% accuracy. And so it's very interesting. So of course, I mean, you know, my father had passed away from cancer, but he had a stroke beforehand. But yeah, his speech started getting worse and worse and worse. It took ages to realize what it was, you know. But so it's very
And these tools, these AI, very powerful AI tools, right? They pick these things up, you know, sometimes years before. People wouldn't even notice, you know, for years. But like physicians wouldn't notice. But the AI tool is very, very precise. Now they all have to be validated still, and you know there's work to be done. But this isn't in some distant future. This is in play right now. So much so, again, that Cambridge Cognition, who are specialists, they already had their own tools, AI tools in the space in terms of voice recognition, and they bought a company that was even more advanced, and who had, you know, something that they clearly thought was you know, valuable enough to purchase the company. And my point on this is that AI and voice is a no-brainer. And language, we all know it from, what were they called, these new models? The GPT models are called large language models. Now, I don't necessarily think these guys are using large language models. It's just, my point is, it's all about voice and language, right? And AI has shown the world how powerful it is. So you can see how a company like Cambridge Cognition, like taking a step back, they haven't thrown all of their, you know, chips into this play, but it is one very fast emerging field, and they're right in the middle of it, right? And they just bought a company right in the middle of it. So putting that aside, I really do like it for as an AI play for that reason. But then they have this, all the standard metrics that we like about a company. They're revenue generating, their balance sheet is strong, they have, I can't remember their last cash position, but it's like 6 to 8 million sterling. You know, they're profitable.
December they had 8.3 million, and like I said, they made a small loss at an operating level of 600 grand. So if you realize they've got that much cash, then, but last year they were profitable, so maybe that's just a dip.
I think there might be some consolidation of the acquisitions there and stuff. So there was some post period end, but they're all de minimis. It's immaterial in the grand scheme of things. Basically, this company is cash generative. Do you see what I mean? If you look at their cash position over the years, it's growing. Yeah. So, you know, the P&L is broadly profitable, or maybe slightly loss making, but a lot of that is non-cash items. And again, the other beauty of this is that a lot of their contracts are like a third cash up front, if not more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the business is cash generative, high margin business, and in a sector that's growing double digit, and even more so with AI. Once you put the AI back, you know, so even if we took the AI component out, because that's blue sky, and you know, much as I like it, I do think it's more than blue sky in this context, because I think it's being applied today in the context of their business. But my main point is, you know, if we took that out of the equation, which is the blue sky element, the business itself is in good shape.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they're winning ever bigger contracts.
So just looking at so cash flow for the year to 31st December 2022, their net cash flows from operating activities 1.668 million. So 1.6 million. So that was positive. So and they also other acquisition they did. So they did two acquisitions last year. Did they back end of last year? It was in October of eClinical Health, which is also a virtual clinical trial solution provider. Which
correct.
Well, that's interesting.
Another important element, because you know, clinical trials, patients want to go home and be monitored from home. So all these things are important. You know, the thing that I like about this company is I could trust them to know what they're buying. You know what I mean? You can never be 100% certain, but these are bolt-ons. They're not. None of these acquisitions are. You know, we're betting the farm on it. So. You know, the AI thing is really interesting and really important, and I think it's going to pay dividends to them. But they haven't bet the farm on it. The virtual clinical trials is a very important. They made a lot. They did really well out of that during COVID, and a lot of pharma companies realized that hey, we can run these trials more remotely. Better for the patients, better for us in terms of costs. So you know, a lot of things. Have come together, and you know the company is now expanding in that space. But overall, Cambridge Cognition has just been a steady, rock solid performer for the last few years. The management team have really, you know, they've proven themselves as reliable. And you know, my hope with this business is that at some point, so let me talk about the share price more recently. I've been a holder. I've sold some about a year ago, but I, you know, I'm still a pretty like it's an okay size position for me, and I love the story because it's just it's not one of these we're hoping something happens in the future. They've just been steadily delivering the whole time, you know what I mean? It's a steady as she goes growing business. Stock price hasn't performed as well, but it's performed a lot better than a lot of biotech companies, but you know, it's I think it's currently at around 100p. It hit highs of 185. But it's come from like 20p, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's still way up there. And my view is that the market's now turning, hopefully. You know, I'd like to think we've seen the worst of the biotech market downturn. And powered by ever bigger contracts, an ever-growing balance sheet, because they're cash generative, so their cash position is growing. By acquisitions, which they're now deploying, you know, and by AI, being in a hot sector, which is cognition, I think this one's good to rally on the next in the next business cycle. You know, starting from a very strong base.
Yeah, well, just looking at the chart, I mean, it's like I say, if you go back to literally, they say that the low of the COVID dash for crash, and it went down to 19 pence there, then literally. Went to almost 190. That's almost 10 bagger there. And then it came down. That was July 2021. It went to sort of 194. Then came back down to February 2022 to a quid. Went back up to sort of as a lower high that time, 190 in April 2022. And it's been gradually, with the bear market, it's been going downward sideways. But it's come back to, well, in fact, it went to a low of about 90 pence. But then that was in April of this year, and then it went up to sort of just over a quid, back down to retest, but a higher low of 92. So went from 90 up, then down to 92, and now it's starting to move up. Because a series of higher lows, it's seeming to want to break that £1 level, but that seems to now be the if you go back to that area there is a nice round figure. There's it's been support before, but so that's now resistance now. But if it breaks that. And it looks like it's tried it quite a few times recently. It looks like we've seen the low, but I mean, it needs to break that £1, get above that £1. In fact, £1.04 it's gone up to and come back of a day. So it needs to be get above £1.04, £1.05, I think. And technically, it's looking very good in the chart. And then they've got the fundamentals to back it up as well, you know?
Yeah. I agree with, all those trading metrics. It feels like hopefully it's bottomed out now. And it's, you know, set for a new rally.
Yeah. Marvelous stuff. COG is a ticker there. COG, please do your own research. And thanks, Vadim. We'll speak to you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, let's look at the markets. Indices, FTSE 100, down 0.16%. Now, 5 days in a row, it's down to 7489. It is below its 200-day moving average, which, of course, a lot of people say is the bull-bear line. FTSE 250, even worse, down close to 1% or 0.8% to 18181. FTSE AIM All share now below its October low. That was 775. Now it's now at 770, so down 0.4%. Okay, here's three top business stories this morning. At three, the financial markets are now predicting UK interest rates will hit 6% by the end of the year and remain at that level until next summer. Thursday's intervention by the Bank of England, of course, raising rates to 5%, failed to lift the pound as economists reacted to the increased likelihood of a recession. There will be a recession. This is my opinion. There will be a recession. And like always, the Bank of England have not predicted the lag effect of what they're doing. They need to pause, stop, see what's happening. You're talking about 18 months lag between raising interest rates and what happens to the economy. That's what can happen. It happened with quantitative easing. And inflation, same thing there. So I think there will be, like I said, a recession. And you can predict that by looking at the inversion of the yield curve, which is now more inverted than it's ever been since the 1980s. And also, this inversion of the yield curve has predicted the last 10 recessions. So that's pretty accurate. Okay, number two, shoppers have been splashing out on new outfits and other items for enjoying the summer weather, boosting sales overall, latest retail figures show. After the sun came out in the second half of May, sales volumes rose by 0.3% when it was predicted that they would contract by 0.2%. Online retailers and garden centres did particularly well, but food sales fell by 0.5% in May, the ONS said. And at one, banks and building societies are meeting Chancellor Jeremy Hunt as pressure grows on them to help people struggling with rising mortgage costs. The meeting comes after Thursday's shock decision by the Bank of England to hike rates to 5%, up from 4.5% as it tries to tackle inflation. Millions of UK households will see their budgets squeezed as a result. And I think I saw a figure saying 1.4 million people will have to renew their mortgages in the next 12 months. Which, for a lot, it's not too bad if you start getting a new mortgage for the first time. That's all you ever know. But if you stretch yourself on a very low interest rate mortgage, and now it's gone up to 5%, then that will be a shock for a lot of people. Okay, winners and losers today. Winners, the BSF Enterprise, that's BSFA, is a ticker there. Cultivated meat approved for consumption in the US. It's a little bit misleading, I suppose, because it's not them. They do that cultivated meat in the UK, but they're saying that two cultivated meat companies, Upside Foods and Eat, just have been granted regulatory approval from the joint USDA and the FDA framework to sell their cultivated chicken and products to the US. So they're saying today's approval will pave the way for the government approval for other producers of cultivated meat in the US, including companies that 3D BioTissues is looking to partner with. That's BSCF Enterprise, by the way, that's their wholly owned subsidiary. So they're saying that paves the way for them. I see what they're saying. But on first reading that, I thought it was them that had got FDA approval. And loser today, down by a big way, and still about, you know, PE of 15, even after a fall of about 26%. So Audioboom, trading update, and they say, during 2023, the operational KPIs of the company have continued to demonstrate year-on-year growth. However, that's a big however, the advertising markets have remained challenging for longer than anticipated. Worth, you know, the read across from that to other companies that rely on advertising revenue, you know. Whilst we believe the advertising markets will improve, the company being in prime position to take advantage of when they do, the company expects the revenue and adjusted EBITDA for the current financial year to be lower than previously anticipated. And because of that, the share price is taking a bit of a whack. Currently looking at it, down around by, let's go check it out. 25%, a quarter of their value wiped off in one RNS update. Okay, most read RNSs today. At three, Revolution Beauty is the saga, the soap opera that is Revolution Beauty. You know, they've taken the former CEO or founder to court, and also Boohoo are chomping at the bit there to remove the board, but the board is saying no, we're doing well here. And so they've provided a trading update and a response to Boohoo for their requisition of a general meeting to replace the board. And they said trading has been excellent during this period, with sales up 60% year on year. Gross margins were 48.2%, which compares with 41.7% in the corresponding period last year. EBITDA at constant currency was 3.5 million compared to Q1 of loss in full year 2024, which is 7.4 million loss. Full year 2024, they've got that wrong, haven't they? FY 2022, I think they mean. But it's gone from a 7.4 million loss to a 3.5 million gain there. And they say cash on hand was £15.4 million compared to £10.1 million. And they say the reason why, the rationale behind Boohoo wanting to replace the board is to improve growth. And they say, look, we have good growth, so there's no point. Second most read RNS is from 88 Energy, Hickory 1 flow testing program update. And they say multiple zones in Hickory 1 scheduled to be tested, all expected to flow based on reservoir characteristics. Rig selection expected to be concluded imminently for Hickory 1 flow tests. And post-well analysis of cores, mud gas isotubes and wireline data is ongoing. Initial results encouraging, with good correlation to migration and thermal maturity models for Project Phoenix. And finally, the most read RNS is Audioboom, which I covered in the loser of the day. That's it. Have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.